Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by Hagen Oaks, America's most awarded golf facility, and Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Come on in. Welcome to the show. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. How you doing? I'm Frank LaRosa, along with Scott Marsh. And here we are, Scott, for another Golf to Go Radio Show.
I am looking forward, as always. We always have a great show planned.
You know, we have some great guests with us, as always, today. Len Dumas, the executive director of the Northern California PGA. He just returned from the annual meeting, National PGA, in Phoenix, Arizona. So he's going to tell us a bit about that. And maybe even more fun, the Northern California PGA is doing a fundraiser in conjunction with Pebble Beach just days before the U.S. Women's Open. So there's an opportunity to play Pebble Beach, to stay some days at Spanish Bay and play, I think, Spyglass and maybe Spanish Bay as well. It's a great package, and he's going to tell us a little bit about that as well.
You had me sold at playing Pebble Beach. And I have to mention, too, speaking of Pebble Beach, our good friend Rusty Seymour had a hole-in-one at the Hay at Pebble Beach I just saw.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that was during his 100-hole challenge, which he did for Youth on Course. So that was great. And I noticed that that was Rusty's third. So
he's in the Frank LaRosa Club now, is what you're saying.
We are tied, I guess. Yeah. So
it's a good club to be in.
Yeah. Now we have to see who gets the fourth first, or if either one of us do.
I just want one.
Yeah. Also on the show today, Jim Stewart. He's the PGA head golf professional at Serrano Country Club. Serrano, as you know, hosted the Champions Tour event there for a couple of years after it being at Rancho Marietta for so long. And it's a remarkable golf course. I've always been very impressed with the playability of that course. It can play certainly as a tournament championship course, but for weekend golfers, for recreational golfers, there's certainly trouble to get into, but it's playable. It's a course you'll enjoy.
It's a great course. We've been blessed to play up there. And I'm really interested in talking to Jim because his background's so varied. He's been at Wood Creek. He's been at Granite Bay. So he knows the public-private, you know, differences. And I really look forward to exploring that with him.
Exactly. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the 10 things that all great golfers don't do. I mean, we everything we read or see is always about, you know, you should do this. Well, we're going to talk about things that the great players don't do and just take a little bit different take on that.
So another way of wording that, it's going to be the 10 things that I do do.
Well, we'll see how many of them you check off. We will be back to get to all of that stuff right after a couple of messages here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour, Sactown Sports, 1140.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Welcome back to the Golf to Go Radio Hour, Sactown Sports, 1140. Frank LaRosa and Scott Marsh. And Scott, as I mentioned earlier, I read an article a while back from a publication called Golf Monthly, and it kind of intrigued me. It was called 10 Things All Great Golfers Don't Do. And as you kind of alluded to, we probably do some of them, and you know, we're gonna talk about why we shouldn't do some of those things. Are you ready for it?
Let's hear it.
Okay, so the great golfers don't arrive at the course with minutes to spare.
Yeah.
This one I know you don't do. I try to get to the golf course at least an hour early to warm up, and I always find you there already in a lather. It's like you've been there for a while, so. Neither one of us do that, but there are many, and we've played with some folks that, you know, they call your name to the tee, and all of a sudden, here they come driving up, shoes untied, shoelaces flapping in the breeze, and they're ready to go. And quite frankly, I don't know how you do that.
I don't either, and there's no way you can expect to have a good round if you don't warm up beforehand, that's for sure.
Number two, they don't follow one mistake with another. You know, and I suppose this is kind of like maybe you get yourself in the trees and you hit a bad shot and you decide that, well, I can get out of the trees and I'm gonna find that little opening there. And well, you don't. And here it comes back down again. You thought, well, I'm going to try it again. They don't do that. They try to have their bad shot, get rid of it and move on to something else.
No doubt. And that's so hard to do because, you know, when you hit a bad shot in the right place, just to chip back out into the fairway, then you start thinking, boy, I'm at a minimum at a bogey and maybe a double based on how I play and possibly a triple. So you're thinking, my goodness, I have to chase a score or a par. And then you got to come up with a miracle shot. And it's called a miracle for a reason, Frank, because most likely it's not going to happen. But sometimes it's kind of fun to try those shots too, every once in a while.
It absolutely is. And we'll have to take maybe put an asterisk on this one because as you say, it is fun to try to pull those off, especially if there's nothing on the line. Now, certainly they're playing in competition.
Of course.
And, every shot means something. And if we're just trying to impress each other, that's a different story.
I agree. Great golfers, you're talking about lowest score. It's a different mindset than maybe going out and recreationally playing.
The other thing they don't do is lose their cool. Certainly everybody gets upset with themselves, but I guess this goes to the notion of how do you really handle it. I love Tiger Woods, who says that he gives himself 10 paces after a bad shot to go through all of the good, the bad, and everything he just did. And by the time he's get to that 11th pace, it's gone. He's moved on to the next thought.
Yeah, well, I think that just says the great golfers are not only great because they're so physically skilled, but they're so mentally skilled, right? It's the ultimate mental challenge. Everybody's going to hit bad shots, whether you're Tiger Woods or you're you or me, but it's how you respond to it. And obviously, for me, that's one that I need to work on because it's really tough when you hit a bad shot just to let it go and think about the next shot.
You know, you talked about mental tools, and I don't want to get too off course here, but when we think of mental tools, it's easy to think in terms of I can't do what the tour players do, and I think anybody that will teach the mental game will suggest that even the smallest thoughts that you can use to just kind of get started in sort of a different way to concentrate is good. You know, we're not tour players, we'll never get to that kind of mental proficiency, but at least we can take small steps to get there.
Absolutely. And we can certainly control our temper. We know that most of the time.
Yeah. Great players don't give up, which is to say, you know, you've hit enough bad shots and made enough double bogeys that, oh, you know, this round is done. Now in competition, that's a pretty poor mindset. A tour player, a scratch golfer, you know, somebody that's shooting for a score, they may make a double or triple bogey, but now they're thinking, how many birdies do I have to make up for it? It's again, a totally different mindset. I've made this shot before, I can make it again. And I think that's the difference in a good player.
Yeah, it's always having that belief that you can turn it around. And you know, when you're out there and you're having a bad round and maybe it's hot and you're walking and you're on the backside of the course, it's tough to really keep that going sometimes, but you do. It's all about that belief and confidence. And the great golfers, they believe in themselves, of course.
No question. Number five, the great golfers do not blame their tools. That putter didn't make that bad putt, that bad stroke, you know, that came from within. I think back to what Gary Player was saying when we were talking about getting fitted. And as he said, in my day, you know, they came out, they handed you a golf club. There was no getting fitted. Yep. Some of them had a draw bias. Some of them had a fade bias. Whatever that club was, you just had to figure out a way to make it work for you. That's a whole different way to play golf.
No question. The way clubs are fitted now and, you know, how the technology is so wonderful, it really isn't a believable excuse to blame your clubs anymore.
No question. The really good players don't worry about three putts, which is to say they recognize that, you know, maybe they didn't release the head the right way, or they came up short, or they were really far away from the hole. Again, it's a three putt. All right, that's done. Let's move on to the next hole. Well, I don't know how many times I've played with people that just can't get over the fact that they three putted and it's going to ruin their day.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. But again, the great golfers realize that's going to happen from time to time. And, you know, I think the mindset, it's like when you reach a green, let's just say you reach it in regulation and then you three putt, it's so demoralizing because you think you're going to at least par that hole. But if you were to reverse it and you hit a crummy drive, but you somehow save par by one putting, then you feel great. But in the game of golf, every stroke is just what it is. It's just one stroke. And so you got to keep that mindset going. And sometimes being on the green's not easier than maybe where you might be chipping from. And so you got to put all of that into consideration.
And I think that has a lot to do with staying in the moment, which is not on this list, but it is very easy as you're walking down the fairway, having hit the green on your second shot, thinking, well, I just shock up a par here, or maybe even a birdie, as opposed to, I probably should have looked at that a little more.
No doubt.
They don't take unnecessary risks. And I guess the operative word here is unnecessary. Risk and reward go kind of hand in hand in the game of golf. And we do take risks, or what we might consider risks, but it's the unnecessary ones, which is, you know, I suppose in their minds, the one that you have very little chance of actually pulling off the shot. They're not going to do that. They're going to find a way to maybe bump it up in front of the green, even though, you know, they don't have a shot of getting on, but bump it up, do a chip, make one putt, get a par, and walk out of here.
No doubt. They're going for what's the highest probability. And that kind of goes back to number two and kind of hitting that hero shot or compounding mistakes. You know, for example, you know, when we play in the media league and we get the number four at Hagen Oaks and you hit a great drive on that par five and you're maybe 250, 260 out and you're thinking, oh, I can clear that water and get on the green and eagle that hole. Well, again, it's not even 1 in 100 for me, but let's say it was 1 in 100. That's still an unnecessary risk to take when you can play out left, get to the green, and probably get your par that way at a minimum.
And maybe even a birdie.
Yep.
They don't under club. Now, this is something I see very often with people we play with. We think we can hit it farther than we can.
Yeah.
We don't take into account the fact that it's cold now. Maybe the ball doesn't go as far, or the wind is really in our face, and that
elevated greens might be another one too, right?
Yeah. There's so many things, and more times than not, we're going to come up short rather than hitting it over the green.
Yeah. No, I think that's key. I always know when I'm in between clubs. Oftentimes I talk myself into hitting a lesser club, and most of the time that's the wrong club. I would have been much better with the longer club than the shorter one.
And I will repeat what two of my friends, a discussion that they had many years ago, because one kept coming up short and the other one said to him, look, when you start hitting the ball over the green regularly, then we'll figure out what we do from there. But until then, hit another club.
Yeah, that's good advice. Very good advice.
Number nine, they don't always hit the driver. And that has more to do with the hole they're playing, or, you know, where they want to set up for their second shot. And again, playing the course backwards from the green as to how to make put yourself in a position to hit that second shot. Again, many of us will just reach for the driver because, you know, if I can hit the driver far, then I have a shorter club going in. You might create some problems that wouldn't otherwise exist.
No question. But, you know, everybody's got that ego, right? And they want to hit it as far as they can. It's not always the right play. I mean, if you're playing a short par four, for example, you could hit a mid iron that sets you up to a very nice second shot instead of maybe hitting that driver that puts you out and trying to chip back downhill or something like that. So again, it's about your game management, which is so critical, which a lot of times, you know, average golfers aren't thinking about out on the course at all.
The number 10 thing that they don't do is hit balls randomly. And I'm guessing this refers more to the driving range than anything else. As Tom Morton has told us many times, when we practice on the range, we should have a plan in mind. We should go through the same kind of pre-shot routine that we would on the golf course, assuming we have a pre-shot routine. But it just keeps it all in the same perspective, the same focus. If you're doing the same things before every shot, which is to pick out a target, do your setup, get your grip, and, you know, and try and hit it at the target, as opposed to, I'm going to take my driver and just see how far I can hit it. Ultimately, that may stretch your muscles out a little bit, but it probably doesn't do much for your confidence.
Not at all. And there's a reason they set those cones out there and they put them to the right of you and to the left, and they do mark every 25 yards. It's so you can warm up with all your clubs. You can hit right. You can hit left. You can warm up. You can try to visualize what your shot might look like on the course. I mean, that's the whole point of the driving range before a round.
So those are the 10 things that great golfers don't do. Listeners, how many of those are you guilty of? Again, this is just for fun, but it's really kind of the notion of kind of keeping what you're really looking for. What are your goals in yep. the golf game? What do you, if you're looking to have some fun and have some laughs, great. If you want to shoot a better score, then, there are things that, that are tried and true. And you probably ought to think about as you play.
Now, these are great things to keep in mind. They're a great mindset and perspective absolutely. To have.
Absolutely. That wraps up our first segment here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. We have Len Dumas with the Northern California PGA standing by to talk to us about their annual meeting and an opportunity coming up to raise some money and have an opportunity to play Pebble Beach. So we will be back with that on the Golf to Go Radio Hour right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
We are back here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour, Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, and along with my buddy Scott Marsh, we welcome in Mr. Len Dumas, PGA. He is the executive director and COO of the Northern California PGA, and they're headquartered in Vacaville. So they're neighbors, and their golf professionals are neighbors throughout Northern California. Len, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Scott. Always appreciate the opportunity to be back with you too. Yeah,
I think it's important to keep you with us on the show because what you do as PGA professionals affects all of us as players. You learn things. Your continuing education, the meetings you have throughout Northern California. I think in may not directly affect us every time we go out to play golf, but they certainly have a bearing on our ability to get to the golf courses and things like that. So you just came back from the National PGA meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, their annual meeting, and tell us what that was like, Len.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. And it's just an exciting time for the golf industry. There's so much positive when we look at the number of rounds being played and the people that have come back to the game and the families that are playing together and the growth in junior golf and the growth in adult golf, too, if you will. So the trajectory is still strong. And yes, last week was our 106th PGA annual meeting in Phoenix. And we did have every other year, there's a change in officers, and that did occur this year. So we thank Jim Richardson for his 2 years serving as president. And many know that Jim is currently the general manager at Riviera Country Club. So he's part of our district, which is Northern California, Southern California, and Aloha. And so we have a new president, John Linder. John is just terrific, and he is in the Michigan section. So John will take over as president for the next 2 years. Don Ray from Augusta Range Golf Club in Phoenix, in Mesa, actually, is now the vice president. And Nathan Carnes. Nathan has been on the board of directors, and Nathan is in the Gateway section, which is St. Louis. So we welcome Nathan to the officer team as our new secretary. And that's very, very exciting. I mean, good for them. Running for offices, it's just difficult. It really is, time-wise, emotionally, and standing up in front of your colleagues about something so important. So congratulations to Nathan on becoming our next secretary of the PGA of America.
We wish them all great success. You mentioned Don Ray, and he is a gentleman that you had at your Northern California annual meeting. And Don is just an interesting guy. He certainly is very accomplished, but the part of his career that I find most fascinating is he was an umpire for a long time. So he knows how to deal with conflict, I guess.
He does, Frank. And I said to him, so Don, I mean, it was a difficult to throw people out. He said, Len, I never threw anybody out. I just let them know that what they just did got themselves thrown out.
There is a true politician.
Absolutely. And Don's style. Don is he's every man's golf professional, every woman's golf professional, just an absolute great character. So we've got the right person. We've got a great officer team right now. We've been fortunate for these past number of years to have that continue.
You mentioned that earlier that Tom Addis, PGA director of the Southern California PGA section is about to retire, which I was not aware of. And in one way, I'm saddened by that because Tom was such a great guy and an incredible leader. But after, 50 some years, I guess at some time you have to give yourself a chance to do a little relaxing. But then you also mentioned that our friend Nicky Gatch is going to take over that position. So a lot of good news, bad news in that one for me.
So, you know, Tom has been a former president of the PGA of America as well, back in 1995 and 1996, I think it was. He spent, born up here in Northern California, spent just about all of his career in Southern California. Frank, as you just mentioned, has been a PGA member for over 15 years. So he has served the last 17 years as executive director for the Southern California section. So has touched all the chairs, has touched so many lives, so many souls, and just a tremendously humble human being. And after all of that, Tom is stepping down, and we're grateful that Nicky Gatch is coming in as the next executive director for the Southern California section. So that will, the transition to some extent is going on now, but officially will be January 1st. So we are so close with Southern California section and with the Aloha section. We do so much together. You know, we talk as partners, no competition there at all. And so we're grateful for a handoff like that and a continuity like that. And we'll be sure to keep Tom close. We need that input.
This time of year, also, we begin to think about the Northern California PGA annual meeting and your awards as well, the awards that were done on a national level. Each section will do, 42 sections around the country, I guess, and each will do their own awards banquet, and yours will be coming up. And Scott, I know last year you were there, and I think Len invited you back for this year. You must not have embarrassed us.
I'm excited to come. And, you know, I'm just wondering, Len, do I put the money on Frank for the 5-time award? Because I haven't seen the line yet on that, but I'm interested to see if I should be placing my bets.
Yeah. So not just yet, Scott, not just yet. Okay.
A lot of competition this year.
And to some extent there is, and which is a good thing, right? That's the idea.
Yes.
And I can't tell you what to do because then we get involved in insider stuff. And
I know we don't need that headache for sure, but I know it's going to be an awesome event, and it's certainly always a privilege to be there and to see all the outstanding people in golf in Northern California, all the PGA pros come to one location.
Yeah, it's really something, Scott and Frank. Thanks for bringing that up. We'll be back at Green Valley Country Club. Our awards will be Sunday, December 4th. And then our section membership meeting will be Monday, December 5. And even at our annual meeting last week in Phoenix, we recognized the national award winners. Excuse me. And it's interesting to hear what people have accomplished nationally and certainly for our section award winners as well. The things that they accomplished during the course of the year are just outstanding. It's all done through passion. It's all done through caring about their customer, caring about their member, and caring about each other. So we're just so grateful to have difficult decisions to make when this time of year rolls around and the committee has to dig in and really determine who the winners are, because it's just an incredible group of people. So we look forward to celebrating them. And again, their night is Sunday, December 4th at Green Valley. We look forward to that a little less than a month from now.
You mentioned the job it is to distinguish between the winners, and in helping to put the program together, I'm afforded an opportunity to look at some of the folks that are involved and look at their applications. And as you say, what they do is really it's above and beyond what you would expect a person to be able to do in a day's work or a week's work or a month's work or the year's work. And it has to make you and the entire section feel very proud of the folks that are practicing PGA practices here in Northern California.
And it keeps us on our toes too, Frank. You know, sometimes you go in feeling, oh boy, I did this and I did that, and that's good for me or something like that. And then you hear what they've done, and you go, oh boy, maybe I'm sleeping too much or just taking too much. That one vacation day, 3 years ago, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But, it's just out of passion and love for the game. And, you know, this is one of the most unique sports we have. We can play it throughout our entire lives. We can play it with other generations. We can play it with all kinds of skill levels, but we always enjoy it so much. So kudos to all of the award winners around the country and nationally as well, of course.
We're talking with Len Dumas, the executive director of the Northern California PGA. Len, before we got on the air, you were talking with Scott and I about the upcoming fundraiser at Pebble Beach in conjunction with the U.S. Women's Open. And that sounds really exciting. What can you tell us about that, that you won't give away any secrets?
Yeah, I don't think there are any secrets left, Frank. This is just incredible. As many know, our philanthropic arm is the Northern California PGA Foundation, and PGA Hope, helping our patriots everywhere, is our flagship undertaking at the moment. And so Pebble Beach reached out to us with this idea about having a fundraiser and right before the U.S. Women's Open. And so here's the deal. We will be there on June 30, July 1, 2, and 3. That's a Friday to a Monday. This is going to be a great event. Three rounds of golf, one at Pebble Beach, one at Spyglass Hill, and one at Spanish Bay. Four nights stay at the inn at Spanish Bay, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We'll have a welcome dinner. We'll have two dinners along the way. Sunday night will be the big dinner with the speakers and so on and so forth. And then we'll be looking to celebrate 4th of July on Tuesday, the 4th. So the way it ties with the U.S. Women's Open, we will be on Pebble Beach on Saturday, July 1, because the LPGA, or the USGA rather, takes over on Sunday, July 2nd, and they have it there. So we'll be the last group to play Pebble Beach for the week, and then Sunday, Monday, we'll play the other two courses. So, you know, be on the lookout for some flyers about this. Be on the lookout for the ability to register. Again, 5 days, four nights at Pebble Beach, playing all three golf courses, and the ability to help us keep our programs going here in Northern California. So this one's a wow.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible, Len. And yeah, that U.S. Women's Open's the 6th through the 9th down there. And right. I'm just curious, too. I know you're on the PGA side, but golf is so interconnected. I know the USGA is a different body, but you've got the Men's Open at L.A. Country Club coming up next year. And, of course, the Women's Open at Pebble Beach. Just the involvement that you have in those events, maybe throughout the state, too. We're talking about the Southern California side as well.
Yeah, you know, we're really grateful, Scott, right, that because of where we are and the facilities that we have throughout the state, we probably have some championship golf going on almost annually.
Yeah, true. Right?
Which is great. So something like the Opens, those are USGA events, right? So we're not too much involved with that, but our involvement certainly will help with volunteers and so on and so forth. But we're more involved when it's a PGA championship, right, which will be at the Olympic Club in 2028, not too far away. 2033, yeah. Holy mackerel, 11 years from now, the Ryder Cup will be at the Olympic Cup, wow. The Olympic Club, and so on. And many know Pebble Beach just entered into a long-term contract with the USGA for the championships. They're out to
2048.
Okay. Yeah.
It's even further, maybe. I know that U.S. Women's further. Open is coming back in 35, 40, and 48.
Yeah, they're out to 51.
Wow. Amazing.
Which is, yeah, just amazing. So, you know, our level of involvement changes based upon the organization that's running it. But we have qualifiers for the tour events. You know, down in Southern California, they'll have qualifiers for the Genesis, the San Diego Open and any Korn Ferry events. And up here, of course, we have the Barracuda and the Fortinet. So, you know, to your point, Scott, we're just, it's incredible, right? Just incredible.
No question. I have to give you kudos too, because at the Fortinet tournament, you were one of the people out on the 10th hole introducing the golfers, and it was fun listening to you.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. You know, and I will say this, that for some of the players that I've called on the tee, they've gone on to some very successful careers too. Yeah.
So Len, people aren't going to want to wait to find out more information about this this Pebble Beach fundraiser. I mean, three rounds, four nights at Spanish Bay. It sounds spectacular. If someone is is looking to be involved, what would you suggest they do to get more information or to get on a list?
So we'll actually have it out in about a week, Frank. Okay? We're finishing up the pieces and getting it out, working with Pebble Beach and their marketing team to get, we're setting up the back end right now. So we'll be able to send out notices, emails, and such with a link to express interest and then even to sign up. So in the meantime, don't be afraid to give us a call here at the section office, 707-449-4742, right? And we'll be happy as we're getting ready to do this launch, take name down and get back to you on that and make sure that you do get the emails.
And you can also Google that telephone number by looking up the Northern California PGA section in Vacaville. Len Dumas, Executive Director of the Northern California PGA, thanks so much for being with us. We always learn something, and now we're all excited about trying to get involved in this Pebble Beach trip.
Yeah. No question. Frank, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the 51 tournament as well, all of you.
Okay, Scott, well, I appreciate that.
We'll shoot for next year, next July.
Let's take it one at a time. But again, thank you both for the opportunity to be with you one more time and just promote, and talk about our great game.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. We'll be back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
We are back here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour and welcoming in Mr. Jim Stewart, PGA. Jim is the head golf professional at Serrano Country Club. And Jim has been there, about 10 years, Jim. Isn't that what you said? How are you?
10 years. Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Frank and Scott.
Jim, I didn't realize you were a born and raised native. It's hard to find folks like that around here.
It sure is. There's a lot of migrants, you might say, especially, in the course of the last few years. But no, I was born and raised in Carmichael, Del Campo, and loved golf ever since I was six. And actually started playing Ansel Hoffman in junior camps with Steve Price. In fact, that's in the early 80s or late 70s. But it was golf and baseball for me ever since I was a kid.
So when did you decide that that the PGA was going to be your profession?
Well, I actually did an article for the our PGA magazine, and they asked me, what got you into the PGA? It's like when I was at Ansel Hoffman, Steve Price, after the junior camp, asked me to, hey, you want to go play a few holes with me and the other assistant? And I loved it. And I thought, man, this is the coolest thing ever. And so I wanted to play golf the rest of my life. But, when I was going to Sac State, I, worked for Raley's and, because that's where my mom worked for 50 years. And I worked for Raley's and I was spending $300 a month playing golf. Maybe I should go work in the golf facility. So I went over and talked to Rob Frederick at Wood Creek and started working there in the 97. So I've been in the golf business ever since 97.
It's been
a great ride.
Yeah, you mentioned the names, and Rob Frederick is certainly one of the premier pros here in Northern California, and he's helped a lot of folks get involved in the game, and they've gone on to be head golf professionals like you at Serrano Country Club.
Yeah, he was, I guess you'd say if I had one mentor, it'd be Rob. I mean, he really showed the light that, hey, be a golf professional is a great way to go. You might not make he always said, you might not make $1 million, but, you sure feel like a millionaire as a golf professional. So he taught me a lot as well, whether it's merchandising, tournaments, rules of golf, and just, how to deal with members and guests, loyal guests.
Serrano Country Club, I'm going to guess, what is it, like 25 years old, maybe something like that? I don't know.
We just had our 25th anniversary gala a couple weeks ago.
Pretty good guess.
It was actually open in 96, so we were a few months late on it. But yeah, so officially 26 years, but it's quite a ride. And it did start up with the Raley's Gold Rush, which really was a boom.
Yeah, I was going to say 25 years is not a lot of time in the golf business, but you already have a rich history with having had a tour event there. All you do for local charities, including the First Tee, 25 years, you've all packed a lot into it. Tell us about the days when the Champions Tour was there.
Well, as you know, it was in the late 80s. It was at Rancho Marietta. And when I was a kid, I remember going there, and it was a wonderful event. And then Serrano was built, and they decided to have it here. I think it was 1996, I believe, was the first year it was here. And, it had a short run, maybe 5 years. It had everybody who was big. You know, Jim Colbert at the time was a huge player. In fact, he won. George Archer won two or three times on the event. And, you know, back then, you know, guys like Dave Stock, the Chichi, Rodriguez, Jim Thorpe, all big names. But I think at some point, Rayleigh's just didn't want to pay for the sponsorship anymore. And I think it moved over to Napa or Sonoma, I believe it was. But the wonderful history they had here. And, you know, it was a good run. It sparked a lot of memberships for us over the years, for sure.
You know, I have one memory that's just locked into my mind. Watching Jim Colbert on your driving range in the rain, hitting five irons after another, again, in the rain, by himself, all within a 20-yard circle. It was just, yeah. It was an unbelievable display. And then I began to realize how good, you know, these players really are.
Yeah. And, you know, we never had the PGA Tour out this way, fall short of Pebble Beach, from the AT&T or the Crosby, but that sure was an event that, you know, people could just come and just watch good golf. Cause it was probably the same year where I watched Jim Colbert sink 8 birdies, and he pulled up his collar, you know, and he pointed his finger like he always did. And I thought, oh boy, that was awesome. But, you know, Hale Irwin was there too. And I can remember walking down the first hole, you know, number one here is the downhill par 4. And I hear this huge roar on number 3. And we get, really loud. And we get over there and say, hey, what was that roar? Oh, Hale Irwin just holed out for an eagle on 3. And I thought, oh, man, we just missed the action. So, but yeah, just wonderful names. And it was a great, it was good to get golf out here in Sacramento. I don't know if it'll come back again, but sure was a fun time.
What I find most fascinating about the Serrano Country Club is that, as we just mentioned, it was able to host a tour event, but it's friendly for a regular weekend player. You don't have to be a scratch or a single digit handicap to play Serrano and enjoy yourself.
You're correct. You know, what I always tell people when they ask, hey, what's the tips of the course? I say, well, it's really probably one of the most generous courses off the tee. So you can't, the houses are set back far enough where you can't get in too much trouble. But when the trouble with the course, or at least the difficulty, lies in navigating with all the bunkers and the size of the greens, because, you know, a lot of golfers around here played Apple Mountain, and, you know, it's not a flat course by any means. You can still walk it, but it's fairly generous off the tee. But yeah, navigating with the greens and the bunkers, it can be difficult, but a lot of members enjoy it.
Scott, yeah, I know you've played Serrano. What's your impression of the golf course, and what's your favorite hole?
Al, first of all, it's a fabulous course. I love playing out there. But to the point, there are a lot of bunkers in front of it. So, you know, for example, I remember on 16, the longer par 5, like trying to reach that in 2. It's for a mere mortal like myself, virtually impossible, because I think I've landed in those front bunkers at least 25 times.
There's a lot of bunkers on 16 as well.
Yes, there are. You know, and then you have the long par 3 too. I'm trying to remember the whole number. I think it's 15 right before. It's probably right around 200 yards.
Yeah. It's a good test. I mean, but we have a lot of dry land to the left of the green, and that's where most of our members play. They just, I don't want to get the ball in the lake, so I'm just going to play left. And
I'm way too dumb to play that way, Jim.
Yeah.
I played with him. He's not lying.
I'm not exaggerating. I'm curious. You mentioned about pro tournaments and in the area. And of course, there's the Fortinet, you know, which is in Napa, which is a great PGA event. And you know, Granite Bay's done a renovation. I don't know what their future plans might be. Del Paso's hosted the U.S. Senior Open in the last 10 years. I mean, could you see Serrano making a bid for another tournament at some point, or was that just something to kick off the country club there to get things started?
I think that was the original goal, just to kind of make a name for itself. I sure, you know, we actually have had the AJGA tournaments out here 4 or 5 years ago, which is, you know, the probably the top of the line junior event of the around the country. As far as getting a, you know, whether it's a Corn Ferry or PGA event, or it's going to be tough because we have a lot of members that utilize the golf course now.
And yeah,
it's tough giving up the golf course. However, you know, I know Granite Bay just finished their fairway renovations, and we're going to go through that starting next week. We're going to get rid of some of those bunkers that Scott Marsh was talking about.
Thank you. Know,
so, yeah, I don't know. We have 113. We may go down to maybe 90 or so, but we definitely have a lot, and we're going to do some irrigation. So, you know, we're going to be very quiet for the next 7 months. But it's always something to look back and ask the members time to time, hey, do we see hosting it? Maybe it's a big USGA event.
Yeah. And I'm curious for you too, with your background, because obviously you've had extensive background working at some of the public courses in the area. And you mentioned working with Rob and Wood Creek and all of that. And then now being on the private side, maybe you can discuss the contrast, the comparisons, and maybe some of the things you've liked about each.
Well, I did love Wood Creek. I was 7 years there. That was a very fun experience. You know, of course, I being the low guy on the totem pole, have to work the nights, work in the shop with the lighted driving range. But it definitely, in that respect, I got a lot of work with the retail side of the business. But Rob was always the one guy to say, hey, you know what? You'd be great at a private club. So, yeah, here we are a few years later, and Granite Bay first. And, you know, the public side of it, you know, it's difficult because you really want to drive revenue. You're looking at different numbers. You're looking at, you know, hey, what's our merchandise per player? You're looking at all these numbers, and you're trying to make money on merchandise. You know, when I was at Granite Bay, kind of the same animal. That was a club court facility, so we still had to try to make a lot of money because the management group owned it. And you really are focused on the budget and your bottom line. But here up at Serrano, it's, you know, it's not all about revenue driven. It's really about member retention and keep the members happy, which, you know, I've really found a great home up here because, you know, just if you can engage the members on a regular basis, you know, they're fantastic.
Well, what's the membership size up at Serrano, and is there a waiting list and all that at this point? Or
it's, you know, it's funny with our economy, it kind of gone up and down. We did have some memberships a year ago. We got a lot of, you know, over 100 members from the Bay Area. And why were they coming here? Well, it was just still homes being built around the club, which inside the gates. So that was a big drive. So we're selling at a market base, and, you know, somebody could get in for 25. But here about 8 months ago, we got a cap, no memberships for sale. And we said, all right, we're going to sell for 45,000. So that's our price right now. We probably have two or three on the list to come in. So, but, you know, our economy could tick the other way and we go back to market price. We just waiting for that bell to ring.
Jim, the golf in Northern California is really remarkable. How would you compare golf in Northern California to the rest of the country, and how fortunate are we to live here?
Well, as I did my the presentation on golf, I did the supply and demand of golf in Northern California since it started. I think the first course was Etna Springs back in the late 1800s. And obviously you haven't seen many golf courses built in the last 15, 20 years. So we may not see any for a while. It's the golf industry is kind of based on cyclical, you know, cycles. It's just peaks and valleys. You look at when these golf courses were built, you know, there's a lot in the 60s, and then we had a little roar. Maybe in the 70s, we didn't have any. When I grew up, you know, if for a lot of the golfers that grew up around here, you can only play Ansel Hoffman, Diamond Oaks, Eldorado Hills, Hagen Oaks, and Bing Maloney. I mean, those were your really five choices. And I think about 1989 or 1990, Cherry Island opened up. And so that was just a boom. Cherry Island opened. You got the ones in the Fairfield, Rancho Solano, Paradise Valley opened. And we saw a huge boom. And then ever since 2000, we really haven't seen any golf courses where, you know, they're still being built throughout the country. So courses are being built around the country. Here in California, they've slowed down for over 20 years.
Well, we've got some great ones, and certainly Serrano Country Club figures into that mix as well. Jim Stewart is the PGA head golf professional at Serrano Country Club, and you've learned about him, you've learned about his golf course, and you've learned about what he thinks about Jim Colbert. So we've pretty much covered everything. Yeah. Jim, thanks for being with us today.
Frank and Scott, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Scott.
The Golf to Go Radio Hour has just, Scott, we've done it. We've wrapped up another hour, and so we'll just have to wait if we have something to say for next week.
Fastest hour in radio.
We'll be back with more next week. Please join us on the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140.